This is Digital Story Podcast number 628, March 27, 2018. Today's theme is the 50-50 rule. I'm Derek Story. Digital photography has had a tremendous impact on our workflow. Now, not only are we creatives behind the camera, we must also be technicians in front of the computer. But how much of each? In this week's podcast, I explore the division of labor during the process of creating artistic images. And I explain what I call the 50-50 rule. So I'm going to start by telling you a story about my days as a wedding photographer, because I think the story really illustrates the point that I want to make in this show, which is the balance of being behind the camera and in front of the computer, and how does that all work? So when I used to shoot weddings with my 35mm film camera, and I tell you, those were good times. And I know a lot of people go, hey, shooting weddings, how could you stand it? So much pressure and, you know, the family and all that kind of stuff. I enjoyed it because, for one thing, I was coming out of photojournalism. And in photojournalism, a lot of times people don't want you to take their picture if you're working for a newspaper or something like that. You know, they're very reluctant to have you point a camera at them. Whereas at a wedding, everyone was ready for me to take their picture. I loved it. I go, suddenly I have all these cooperative photo subjects, and they look nice too. They're all dressed up. And on top of that, they feed me. So I thought that shooting weddings coming out of photojournalism was a pretty good gig. And especially during this time, this part of my career, because weddings paid well, and as you'll find out in a minute, they were relatively simple photographically. And what I mean by that is I would take, 15, 20 rolls of film with me. And I had a little system so that when I shot a roll of film, then it went into a separate container. And as the wedding went on and into the reception, that container would fill up with exposed rolls of film. And yes, we would work like dogs during the day into the evening. It's true. Shooting a wedding is a lot of work. It's very demanding. And, you know, we'd shoot a roll of film, put it in the container, load another roll of film, off we go. And a lot of times, I mean, I wasn't a super heavy shooter, but a lot of times I would have, you know, 15, 18 rolls of film by the time the night came to a conclusion. And when the night did conclude, usually around midnight or so, I would take all that film in that separate container, and I would fill out this envelope for the custom lab that I used here in Santa Rosa. I'd fill out the envelope. I'd put all that film, all those rolls of film, into that envelope, go to the lab that night because they had a drop box. They had a slot that you could put stuff in. And I would put the whole batch of film in that slot. And usually by now we're at, 1 o'clock in the morning, 1:30 in the morning, something like that. So then, just like I used to do in the days when I played in a band, I used to play in a rock and roll band earlier when I was in college. So we would go out to breakfast after a gig and go to Denny's or something like that. Well, after a wedding, I would do the same thing. So we'd go out to breakfast, probably about 2 in the morning, go to Denny's, have a Grand Slam or something like that, and then go home and just like fall into bed. But the interesting thing was that when I fell into bed at whatever time it was, with my stomach full of pancakes and scrambled eggs, I was done. I had worked really hard that day. I had taken a lot of what I hoped to be very good shots. And then I took all that film, all that capture material, and I handed it off to someone else who was a professional at processing the film and making very nice proofs. And that's the thing I loved about custom labs in those days, that they would make very nice proofs. They would make me look good. Probably about a week later or so, maybe 10 days, something like that, I'd go back to the lab. I would pick up those proofs. I would pick up the negatives. The negatives would all be sleeved for me. I didn't even have to sleeve them. They would do that. And then I would take all those proofs and I would sort through them. I would organize them. I'd pick out the good ones. I'd do all that kind of stuff. Put them in a nice book. I mean, this was fun because I was handling the prints. I was looking at the images. This was my first look at the wedding since I had shot it. So it was very enjoyable. Pick out the great shots. Make a nice little book, something that was really a good presentation. And then schedule an appointment with the bride and groom. And when they got back from their honeymoon, then we would get together. And that was always such an exciting time because they were just coming off their honeymoon. And every time. I mean, I can't remember one time where they were in a bad mood. They were always in a great mood. And they were excited to see their pictures. So we sit down and I get to share the pictures with them and watch their expression. And, you know, we would go through the whole thing together. And it really made that moment, you know, where I was showing them their wedding for the first time, really made all the hard work worth it, in addition to, you know, being paid pretty well for the work that I was doing. And so it was a very enjoyable experience. I mean, I really liked it a lot. So I did this for a number of years. It was quite a steady gig for me. And it was really the way that I launched my photo business. You know, I started out like everyone else. You know, I was working for other people. I had day jobs. I did all sorts of different things, sometimes photography, sometimes writing, sometimes graphic arts, whatever it took, you know, to pay the bills. And then I started my photo business on the side as a freelancer. And over time, you know, I built up more equipment. I built up more revenue and contacts. And of course, at some point, I went off on my own. But it took quite a while for me to go from, you know, that point, shooting weddings with a 35 millimeter camera to where I'm sitting right now with my own studio in Santa Rosa, California. An interesting thing happened along the way, however. And that interesting thing is digital photography. And so digital photography hit right in the middle of my wedding career. So it was all film in the beginning. All film, all the time. I shot Fujifilm, the 400 portrait film. It was really gorgeous stuff. And then as digital started to gain ground and get more traction, then we would bring a digital camera too. And so then I would shoot some digital, but the real deliverable was still film, and we'd use the digital to send them some shots while they're on their honeymoon, which we couldn't do before, so that was kind of cool. But then we made the transition, just like everyone else, to all digital. And this was near the end of my wedding career. I only did this all digital thing for a few years, a couple years, two, three, something like that. And I noticed how much harder suddenly I was working because we worked just as hard during the day, right? Shooting the wedding, doing the group shots, doing the reception, you know, all the stuff that we normally do. And then I would wrap things up, but instead of dropping the film off the lab and going to Denny's, I was looking at a lot of work because now I had memory cards full of images that needed to be sorted and processed and fine-tuned. And how am I gonna, you know, show these? Am I gonna make proofs? Am I gonna put a gallery online? Well, if I put a gallery online, then I have to, you know, do that. I have to do the uploading after I do the work. For that week, 10 days that followed the wedding, instead of doing all the other stuff that I used to do, I was now doing the post on this. I was doing the stuff that the lab used to do for me, but now I had to do myself. And I was thinking, wow, this is a lot of work. It really was. It was a lot of work. And not only that, when digital first came in, you know, we had Photoshop, which was already around, and a couple other apps. But the workflow was not anything like what we have now with Lightroom or Capture One Pro or even Photos. So we worked really hard and the tools were not easy to use. It dawned on me at that point that photography had changed. Because, yes, I used to go into the dark room and do black and white prints. I never did color work in a dark room. I would do black and white work in a dark room. And I was really proud of those, and I still have a number of those black and white prints that I made in darkroom. But the color work was always handed off to someone who specialized in that sort of thing. And then over time, of course, the tools did get better. We did get Aperture, we did get Lightroom, but we still had a lot of work to do, and we still had a lot to learn on the technical side of post-production, stuff that I really didn't have to know before. And it got me thinking that, you know, now I have to learn a new skill. Now I have to be good in front of the computer, just as good in front of the computer as I am behind the camera. And, you know, that whole thing was really a revelation for me. And it really, in the end, led to me getting out of weddings because they just took up too much time. Suddenly, it wasn't just a weekend anymore. It was, you know, a week or 2 weeks for each wedding. And that was more time than I wanted to spend on that particular revenue stream. So finally, I let go of weddings and I stopped doing them. But that doesn't mean that the equation has gone away. And this is the point that I want to discuss today, is that generally speaking, as artists, we are usually better at one end or the other. In other words, our natural strength usually is either at capture and having a good eye for composition and noticing interesting lighting and being able to interact with people in a way to get expressions that we like. Or we tend to be maybe more introverted and a lot better, just the two of us, me and the computer, and working on the technical side of things in terms of, you know, processing images, sorting, working highlights and shadows, doing color adjustments, cropping on the computer instead of in the camera, all that kind of stuff. So we tend to be better at one end or the other. Now, on top of this, things are changing on both sides of the equation. So our cameras, our digital cameras, are constantly getting better. However, it's interesting in terms of, let's say, our DSLRs, they haven't evolved as much as what we have seen on the post-production side. In other words, we might get more megapixels and we might get HD video, we might get 4K, we might get, but in terms of the actual capture, they haven't changed as much as what we're seeing on the post side. And the post side and the changes that are happening there really jumped out at me just in the last few years when applications such as Luminar has jumped on the scene. So my work with Luminar has really, you know, got me thinking more and more about this. And in fact, my work with Skylum in general has me thinking more about this, both with Aurora HDR and Luminar 2018. And the reason why I'm thinking more about it, especially as I work, you know, with their photographers, as I work in the public group where people are using these tools to create images, post them, and have discussions about them, then I'm looking at a lot of these shots and I'm thinking, wow, we have really, in a lot of ways, gone from maybe 50-50 to maybe 20% capture, 80% processing, depending on the photographer, or it could be the other way around. But the things that you can do in post with the filters that we have and the ability to really change the look of an image beyond just tonal adjustments, beyond just color adjustments, and beyond just sharpening and cropping, we're now actually changing, you know, the actual structure of the image by adding, you know, softening filters or filters that apply some kind of effect that is different than what we could do in the camera. And so people that have a bent toward that type of photography, the technical side, working on the computer, now suddenly are able to take, let's say, an average picture, you know, interesting but average, well-composed, sharp, so on and so forth, but it wouldn't really jump out at you if you just saw it on the back of the camera, and then do spectacular things with them using these post-production tools. And suddenly you're looking at the shot and, you know, they've replaced the background and they've added a number of filters, and you're looking at this image and it is just, you're going, wow, that's absolutely beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. And if you get to see the original shot, you go, you took that and made that out of it? I am very impressed. And I am very impressed when I see this sort of work. I've really been thinking a lot about this equation. And the fact of the matter is, going back to what I said earlier, that we tend to be better at one side of it or the other. I think to be a successful modern photographer who does work that is considered artistic, I think you have to be good at both sides. And I know some people are going to push back about this and saying, hey, you know, I just get it right in the camera. That's what's important to me. You know, and, you know, the other stuff is just, I don't know what that is. It's not photography. But I don't think that's really true anymore. I think that capture is wildly important, right? Because the better that you do at capture, the more options you have in post. And obviously at capture, you want to make sure that, you know, your eye, your vision captures a scene, first of all, that is potentially interesting, if not interesting, right out of the shoot. Not to mention that you capture a good tonal range, not to mention that the image has sharpness to it. You know, all the things that really, then when you move that material, that file, into post-production, then you really have a lot of options and you have a lot to work with. And I was thinking that as photographers, each of us, and as artists, as we begin get better and improve and compete with, you know, some of the fantastic stuff that we're seeing, you know, all over the place right now online, the first step, I think, is to just step back and identify your strengths and weaknesses and go, what am I stronger at? Am I stronger at capture or am I stronger at post? And take a look at, you know, the images that you think are really good and maybe that people have praised you for or, you know, you've had success with. Look at that image and go, how much of that image was capture? How much of that image was post? And, you know, and just try to really take a look at it. I think in general, the reason why I say the 50-50 rule is that I think we need to be equally good at both. I do. I think we need to be equally good both behind the camera in front of the computer. Generally speaking, right out of the shoot, we're not. So first identify where your strengths are. Capture, post. Once you do that, then go, okay, I seem to be a lot better at capture and I'm still struggling at post. I haven't warmed up to the tools. I haven't really spent time, you know, learning how to use whatever application I favor as well as I could. There's probably a lot of things that application can do that I don't realize it can do, or I haven't learned how to do yet. Identify which one you're weaker at, and then put your energy there. Put your energy on the area where you need more work. Now, it can be just the opposite, too. For example, you could be a computer guy or gal and be very comfortable with Photoshop or with Luminar or with Lightroom, whatever you happen to use, Affinity Photo. Another very powerful application. You could be very good there, but you're not really putting the effort, the energy into great capture. You don't feel like going out that much. You don't explore that much. When you're at a scene, you don't really work the scene, right? You know, you just sort of shoot quickly and then move on to the next thing. You never got over your fear of taking portraits, you know, so you haven't worked at interacting with people. All the areas of capture that could lead to you getting better content to move onto the computer, you haven't really focused on. And in that case, because your technical skills are so good in post, if you worked more at capture, if you brought better content in, better, you know, stuff that was more compelling, then the magic that you can do on the computer would be even more magical. The challenge that I have, you know, at the end of, you know, sort of this examination of where we are right now in photography is to work on the area that you're not as strong as and see if by working on that area, if you can elevate the overall appearance of your work. And I think you can, and I think you will, if you are honest about what you're good at and what you're not good at. I'm constantly going through an examination of my work and, you know, for instance, just on my end, I still think I'm better at capture than I am at post. You know, my post is, generally speaking, to bring out what I consider the good stuff in the capture, but I don't do anything with it really beyond, you know, I don't take it to that other place. And I think maybe I should look at that some more. I think I should work on that some more. And so there's my challenge. Of course, we can always be better at both ends of it, but I think this is a simple way to sort of examine your own photography and then hopefully help you move it forward. All right, I have a couple quick news stories here that are just interesting. Fun stuff in the headlines right now. This first one's from DP Review. Rumor, Canon full-frame mirrorless already being used by select pro photographers. And here's what they said. A full-frame mirrorless camera is well into its development cycle and, in fact, is being used by select Canon pro photographers in the field. Canon Rumors reports that they're very confident we're going to see something announced before the end of Q1 in 2019, while other outlets have predicted something for Photokina this September. So this whole idea of Canon producing a top-end full-frame mirrorless camera has really heated up over the last week or two. And we've gone from, you know, some casual rumors. It sounds like Canon is working on something. And then Canon, in some of their recent interviews, I think have really indicated that they are working on something. And now we're hearing that not only are they working on something, that, but we may see it by the end of this year or early next year. And even if we don't see it to early next year, I'm sure they're going to let us know about it, probably at Photokina, right? And say, hey, even if this thing isn't coming until January 2019, this is what we're working on. So, you know, don't buy anything else because this is coming. And I think Canon finally coming heavy into the mirrorless space is going to have an effect on the overall space. And I think it's going to be very interesting. You know, right now, you know, Sony has really had its way in terms of full-frame mirrorless. Olympus and Fujifilm and Panasonic are doing really well with their respective formats. And we're just seeing a lot of innovation. It's been a lot of fun in the mirrorless space. But to have Canon drop in, and if they drop in with a really good full-frame offering, I think it's going to have a big impact at the top end because, you know, their impact at the low end hasn't really been substantial. In other words, Canon coming in with a consumer-oriented mirrorless camera just isn't going to cut it because we can already get such good cameras from the existing mirrorless companies that doesn't mean much. At the top end at full frame, there's really only Sony. So they can focus, Canon can focus on Sony, say, what are these guys doing? Where are the weak spots and where can we exploit? And then they come out with something and then we have something very interesting at the top end, you know, the full frame for professionals. And then the other question is, of course, what kind of lenses? Are they going to stick with the EFM, you know, the special lens mount for mirrorless, or are they going to try to create a mirrorless body, a full-frame mirrorless body that uses existing Canon glass? And if they go that route, I think that's desirable. Of course, that's what everyone wants, but that's a tricky way to go. And in fact, it's funny. I was just looking at a camera today produced by Pentax. They actually made a mirrorless camera back a few years ago, you know, designed by that Australian designer, Mark, and I can't remember his last name right now. I want to say Newsom, but I'm afraid I'll get it wrong. At any rate, and, you know, so I read some reviews on it, and the big thing about it was that you could use K-mount lenses on it. So you could use your existing Pentax lenses on this mirrorless camera. And it was fascinating, but the knock on it was that it was, well, it was practically as big as a DSLR, and so you're giving away a lot of the advantage of mirrorless photography, and that's because, you know, if you're going to have this DSLR lens mount, basically, you know, that's going to influence the size of the camera. So that will be a challenge also that Canon faces, and of course a decision that we know they've already made, we just don't know what it is yet. So I just think that this is going to be fascinating. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Canon comes out with. And I'm very curious to see how it's going to impact the overall mirrorless space, and especially, again, the full frame area of it with Sony. This is going to be fun times to be a spectator. Speaking of Canon, this is a fun piece that I found on F-Stoppers. F-Stoppers reports, in a recent interview with CNBC, Apple sound designer behind many of the iconic beeps and bloops on a Mac, Jim Reeks, shares the origin of their naming and their compositions. As it turns out, it's a film camera from the 1970s that was personally owned by Reeks since high school behind the ubiquitous iPhone camera click and screenshot sound effect on the Mac. It was recorded from a Canon AE-1 and then slowed down to create the custom sound that we know today. And even to this day, Reeks still seems to be not used to his recording being played everywhere he goes. A Canon AE-1 was the basis of that shutter sound for our iPhones, and then, of course, the screenshot sound on the Macs. And I just think that's really cool. I love knowing where that sound came from. And by the way, Canon AE-1, what a great choice. That was a fantastic camera in the 70s. That was one of the cameras that changed photography for me. So I think that part's kind of cool, too. All right, I have a couple of pieces here, just updates and so forth. I want to mention again a story that I talked about last week about, do you have a film camera that needs a good home? Basically, through the film camera shop, I have been able to take in film cameras that weren't being used, refurbish them, fix them up, make them pretty, make them work again, and then get them in hands of people that want to shoot film at an affordable price and something that's very trustworthy. So what I try to do on the film camera shop is give people a camera that meets their expectations. So I try to say what the flaws are in the description, if there are flaws, and I only try to put, you know, good cameras that are functional. I film test them to make sure they work properly. Yeah, I do a lot of work so that it meets more of what most of us would expect to receive when we open that box. And, you know, that's one of the reasons why that, you know, if you do have a camera that you send to me, that, you know, I will take care of it. I will try to bring it back to life and try to get it in the hands of someone that can really appreciate it and not have it be some ugly surprise when they open the box. You can let me know about that if you know, you ever come across one. And just use the contact me form on the Nimble Photographer and get in touch. And we'll take it from there. Couple workshop updates. Just want to remind folks that are on the reserve list that the Burney Falls and Lassen Volcanic National Park workshop is going to be September 27 through 29. The reserve list is working fine. We've got everything fixed on that. I haven't sent out invitations yet. Still working on a few details, but those dates are set. And so you can make your plans around that. And then the Aerial Photography Workshop, June 8th through 10th, and that's here in Sonoma County. So I have a few seats open for that, and that one is going to be a blast also. San Francisco, we're in pretty good shape on. I do have one seat open. We're steaming ahead now. Really top-class Olympus gear. We're going to have those 1.2 lenses. Actually, all three of them. We have the 17, 25, and 45 1.2 lenses. That we're going to be able to let people shoot with. And EM1 Mark II bodies, Pen-F body. Good stuff. Very excited about it. The next podcast that you hear from me will be recorded. I think I'll record the next one from Oahu. And then the one after that will be recorded from Maui. And I'm working on my various projects on both of those islands, and I'm heading out. Let me see. Well, by the time you listen to this, I'll already be there. I'm actually recording this podcast on the weekend instead of Monday because I'm flying on Monday. So I'll already be there, and so it's going to be fun. You're definitely going to want to tune into the next two shows because I'm going to have great stuff to talk about. And finally, a big thanks to our friends at Red River Paper and supporters through the Inner Circle, through the Patreon Inner Circle. Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the show, creators of fantastic inkjet paper, supplier of envelopes, glassine sleeves, ink, you name it, they have it on their site. It is a printer wonderland at Red River Paper. They have a tile on all the pages of the digital store. You can go there, go to our landing page, see what the special is, explore the tutorials, explore the reviews, look at all the great products, learn how to do something interesting with your inkjet printer, the printer that you probably already have at home. And they have a terrific Facebook page at facebook.com/redriverpaper. And then those of you that are part of our Patreon Inner Circle, I have two movies queued up for you. I will probably launch them on April 1st or April 2nd. I'll do that from Hawaii, but I already have them ready to go on the server. I've gone over them. So I've got two goodies that'll be coming to you. And of course, they will show up on your Patreon site. You'll get notification about that. And I hope you enjoy that. And just keep in mind that that is one of the ways that I like to say thank you for helping me keep the show on the air and support this podcast and everything else that we do. Alrighty, I'm going to finish packing my suitcase. I'm going to head off to Oahu. And the next time you hear from me, I'll be there. Until then, have a great week. I'll talk to you next Tuesday. Bye-bye now.